From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear this show at KCRW.com. Well, they said it couldn't be done. They said Push by Sapphire couldn't be turned into a movie. If you've read Push, you have to ask yourself, wow, how do they do this? Sitting across from me is the Oscar-nominated screenwriter and adapter of Push, which is now known as Precious, based on Push by Sapphire, Jeffrey Fletcher. Jeff, first of all, thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure, Elvis.
It's an enormous undertaking because so much of the book is about chaos and about her coming into her own over, basically, obviously, it's The Color Purple in a lot of ways. But with each chapter, she becomes more and more articulate, Precious, and figures out who she is. You don't have that kind of that kind of freedom to do that kind of thing at the very beginning of a movie. So what was the first thing you thought about when you looked after you read the book? What did you ask yourself about how best to serve the material?
Well, one of the questions early on was whether to have voiceover. I felt it was the right thing to do. And then the team had asked, well, is it going to be her voice or this sort of omniscient narrator? And I thought, oh, no, this book is so much about her gaining her voice. Let's take it from her point of view. And I'll tell you, the book was tough stuff, not only because we've got it from the perspective of a semi-literate character, but the content is
rough. That. There is that. I mean, you read that book, and what can you leave in? Because one thing you did, and we should talk about this here, is you invented that fantasy life for her, which really is not in the book at all, and gives rise to an inner life that could be served merely by narration, but we get the chance to see that.
Well, I'll tell you, the book has a brief mention of her thinking of herself as a star of a music video. But, you know, one of the many influences on this was my undergraduate studies in psychology. Now, when I looked at the book, I tried to look at it in with a cinematic filter on. So I thought, oh, well, here's a great opportunity. These fantasy sequences can be tied to her trauma. Now, that's a real thing when people undergoing these horrific moments need an escape, or and sometimes the escape, they might even split into separate personalities. On a second level, I thought, wow, this would be good in case the audience needs an escape. And lastly, I thought, well, this is a visual element to bring, but it's this sort of organic visual element to really make it a piece of cinema, because my whole goal from the start was to honor the spirit and the impact of the book, but make it into an accessible and cinematic experience.
It's The Treatment. I'm talking to the Oscar-nominated adapter of the book Push. Its screenwriter is Jeffrey Fletcher. One of the things that you talk about being entertaining, and the book really sort of pushes that fine line between entertainment into something altogether different. Very early on,
I was warned about this book even before I started writing. I said, oh, this is difficult, dense, and grim.
And a lot of producers have been circling this for a long time, including at one point Madonna wanted to produce a film of it.
That's right. Well, I'll tell you, it hooks you. It has some power over you. And at the same time, some people find it this tough experience. I think they also see the hope in it. Now, me, when I read it, I think that I had a different take. I thought this story was brimming with light. To me, yes, there were times when it was difficult, but I'd never felt so alive. I'd been struggling to get in the industry so long, and here was something that I felt really right in tune with. And so it brought out the best in me, and I poured every influence I had, from old French, Japanese, and Italian films to American films from the 70s to psychology and mythology. My struggle to get in the industry, that understanding of that kind of resilience.
It could be almost like a metaphor for an artist, you know, being perceived one way and having this inner life with these movies you want to write, these things you want to do. I mean, these flights of fancy that come from inside the protagonist.
Oh, precisely. And I really think that was a huge way that I connected with her. I looked at her as this person who had so much to offer, but was searching for her voice and may or may not ever have the opportunity or the support to get there. And though she does so much on her own, I don't think any of us really gets anywhere without the kind of support that she receives, while at the same time, one could argue that she is also the strongest one in this film and has taken the greatest journey in this film.
But so much of it for you must have been seeing a way to invest yourself in that sort of thing of the disenfranchised, which is basically the story of the black artist in the film business, isn't it?
Very much. And, you know, people say, well, you grew up in a good home and you went to a prep school and you went to an Ivy League school and then you went to graduate school and all this stuff. But in this country, I think this is true of all groups. No matter if you are a billionaire or if you're on assistance, if you're of a so-called ethnic group, there's going to be understanding. There's going to be overlap in the vernacular, in the mindset, because people from every level of the socioeconomic spectrum can have trouble getting a cab or can be watched in a store. But every single group has their own things. Even groups we don't think are discriminated against have their stuff. So, and when I looked at Precious, yes, there's a part of me that certainly connected because she's an African-American, but I'll tell you, another part of me wrote this thing from the point of view that this is a 16-year-old girl going through an incredible journey that happens to take place in Harlem. Because a lot of me, I look at her also as Odysseus or Huck Finn or Seeley from The Color Purple. I think that this story is so completely universal. And, when people watch, I have people come up to me, look nothing like Precious, and they tell me I'm Precious. And even if you haven't gone through the same sorts of difficulties she has, I think she's an inspiration to tell you that you can get through anything.
It's the treatment. I'm talking to the adapter of the book Push. It's Precious now. The film is. It's the Oscar-nominated writer is Jeffrey Fletcher. But as you were talking, I want to ask you this because it feels so much like what's called in psychological terms the other. Even to the point where, the other is somebody who lives inside the shell of what is abused. And that's so much of Japanese cinema. You said that. And that's so much about that division between the public self and the private self, which lends itself to, again, to even in this day and age, I shouldn't say even because it really hasn't changed that much, the travails of the African-American in the film business where, because I'm sure you pitched and gone through a number of these meetings and have been told in de facto terms that if an African-American-themed film is a success, it's a fluke.
Well, I'll tell you, with my experience so far, early on, before the film came out, the things people thought of me for were more so African-American themes.
Let's say archetypal, shall we say, African-American themes? African-American film experience exists in the most archetypal terms, does it not?
Oh, precisely. Very much so. It's very narrow. And
and part of you must have viewed Precious as a way to break past all that.
Oh, yeah. One of the things I was so thrilled about was, well, here's a chance to tell a story with a lead character we've never quite seen before. And the fact that we are spending the better part of 2 hours with her in a multiplex, that alone is a huge statement. And what I wanted to do there was to handle this character in a dignified way and have people leave thinking, wow, she wants the same things I want. She wants to love, to be loved, and to contribute. She has the same dreams. She has the same insecurities, the same pain, and most importantly, the same value.
At what point, though, did you decide that you were going to make this, in de facto terms, you? I mean, because it feels to me, and we talked about this briefly a couple of times, I've met you before, that there's a lot of you invested in that character. When did you decide to make it you?
Very, very early on. You know, I was really inspired by the book, even though it wasn't an obvious adaptation. I think when you find your way in to something, I think the great works of art are both so specific, yet leave room for you to project and interpret aspects from your own life. And so for me, as specific as the book was, it was also a canvas for so many things that had been inside of me for so long. I saw so many outlets to really utilize all the training in filmmaking, but also the joys and the disappointments and the optimism from my real life. So it was a therapy of sorts, and it just activated and brought every single thing I had experienced or learned into that script. And it was like being in a zone of sorts.
Which almost, in some terms, must dictate the story you're going to write. It almost told you what to leave out as you were addressing yourself in it, didn't it?
That's an excellent point, because early on reading it, I looked at this thing with a filter on. I'm trained as a director. And so I would say, well, okay, what's cinematic? What is not? What can be dramatized visually? What cannot? What belongs? What doesn't? And what can be invented or added that helps to tell this story? When people come up to me and they are confused about something that happens, they're confused as to whether it was in the book or the film. To me, that's a huge compliment. When things that have been created and woven into the fabric of this universe are there in an organic manner.
Because I have to say, the classroom stuff almost reminds me of what it's like to be in creative writing classes in school.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. It was very, very different.
And it's not the way that stuff is in the book at all. I mean, but in fact, those classroom scenes feel like. I wonder if you almost even drew on some of your own classroom experiences. And you go and you basically sit and you wait for others to tell their stories before you tell your own.
Hmm.
And in writing classes.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a fantastic way to learn. I remember my favorite classes were all that way. And I hadn't really thought about it until this moment. And it goes along with your question about bringing yourself into this. And I hadn't really thought of it, but I remember my favorite teachers, my favorite courses, there was such a degree of freedom. My favorite professors from film school had this way about them where they would present things but leave you room to explore and learn on your own, which I think is such a wonderful way to learn, and we forget about that in most classroom settings.
We'll take a break. My guest is the Oscar-nominated adapter of the book Push. It's the movie Precious. It's Jeffrey Fletcher. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
It's The Treatment. I'm shocking the Oscar-nominated adapter of Precious by saying he's an Oscar nominee. He's Jeffrey Fletcher. One of the things we talked about when Lee was here was at a certain point, if you're a black person and you have female members in your family, you're watching Imitation of Life. Hmm. You're watching Douglas Sirk. I mean, just because that is both comedy and melodrama simultaneously, especially to black families in the way that I think it never was to the, as we put it here, the mainstream culture. And I wonder if that was something that you felt an affinity for too and marshaled in some way for this.
I think for me, on one level, I think everything I see has some sort of influence on me. But it wasn't as much of a conscious influence in terms of those films. But I have seen them and enjoyed them, so it very well may be there. There are times when I've done something and then only years later realize exactly where it came from. In film school, I did a 22-minute surreal love story, which actually led to Lee, you know, giving me this opportunity.
Is there much dialogue in the love story at all? Because
no.
I imagine it's not, is there?
No, very little.
Okay.
It's sort of, I think some people say it feels like these old Italian and French films, and there really is very, very little dialogue there. But I realized, you know, yes, it was a love story on the surface, but only years later did I realize what it was really about. It was really about the death of my father. But at the time, I thought I was making a love story. But it's crystal clear to me now what it's about.
What changed in you that made you see what was actually at heart in the short that you're talking about?
All it was distance. I'm a different person than I was then. I look back on these old films I made, these little short films, and it's the clearest window into my mind that I have. From a philosophical standpoint, from a creative standpoint, they're remarkable sort of documents to look back upon, and I can kind of see exactly where I was. And the funny thing is, when making these things, certainly you're in the moment of that piece, but you're so in the moment. And you see so many things, but there are still things that you don't see and perhaps that you shouldn't see. And if you – I believe you need to know what the project is about that you're making. But I also believe there should be some room for mystery, even to yourself. And maybe that's where some of the poetry comes in.
It's the treatment. I'm talking to the writer of the film Precious, Jeffrey Fletcher. Did your father encourage you to follow these things? I just wonder if part of this film you were making, you're talking about, rather, the short you made, is your way of just sort of saying to him, thank you, and just sort of playing these things out in some way, in some ways that you didn't really get to express to him when he was alive.
Yeah, I tell you, the morning of the nominations, that was the toughest part, that he didn't see it. I grew up, I tell you, I feel... I must be among the luckiest people, one of the luckiest people in the world. My family was so supportive, and he gave us everything. He said there was nothing we couldn't do, nothing. And my mother was an educator her whole career, school principal for most of that. You know, my father spent great amounts of time with us.
What did your dad do?
He worked for General Dynamics as a technician. Helped build the submarines. And, you know, they read to us. They worked so hard for us. They, you know, Christmas, we always had maybe too much stuff. But I don't mean that in a way that we were spoiled, but I just look back and knowing how hard they worked for us and knowing what they... You know, they did for us.
How old were you when you told him about your dreams to get involved in the film business, and what was his response?
Oh, it was anything we wanted. I there are times I wanted to be a baseball player or an astronaut. In our house, you know, we had a piano when my two older brothers and I were very young, and my middle brother, Todd, just took to it. And now he plays 5 instruments, and he's a composer. And he also speaks maybe 5 languages or so. I speak 2, English and bad English. But and my oldest brother got an early Radio Shack computer. And he's a math guy and a finance guy. And I got cameras. And so it affected all of our, you know, sort of trajectories. I mean, that doesn't even begin to talk about the effect my two older brothers had on me. My brother Todd, all of our conversations about structure and storytelling and mythology. My oldest brother, Buddy, I remember one day he was home from college briefly, and he saw me trying to figure out how to make some kind of movie. I had these toys out, and he stopped just for a minute. He said, look, if you move the toy a little bit, start, stop the camera. Move the toy a little bit, start, and stop the camera. Move the toy a little bit, start, stop the camera. Play it back, see what happens. I was like, this isn't going to do anything. And then it moved, and from then on, I was nonstop. I know at one point it just went just too far. I would never stop making these movies where these toys were fighting each other. Ultimately, for me, the biggest thing about this nomination is, you know, my family invested so much time with me. I just wanted to do something to make them proud.
Obviously, you did. I'm talking to Jeffrey Fletcher, the writer of the film Precious, which I'm sorry to say was nominated for an Academy Award this year. I'm sorry to keep bringing this up, Jeffrey, but now you know the first five words in your obituary, as the old joke goes. Oscar-nominated screenwriter.
An agent told me this early on. He said, you know, whatever happens or doesn't happen, you have that.
And you're in a select group of people, too. As you know, there have only been a handful of African-Americans. I mean, you must reflect on that, too, because you talk about speaking two languages, but as a black creative person, you do. We of course we do, because we're listening to the way we talk and the messages that are being imparted back and forth in the mainstream, and which was simultaneously translating those things. And what's fascinating about watching Precious is that ability of hers to actually translate those things to herself in a much faster way. I mean, it's like watching that kind of maturation process again. You know, it feels like the other in African-American terms to me.
Oh, yes. Here's the thing about Precious. We would like to think that our human experiences are so different. I guess it's comforting for a lot of people to see a girl like Precious and think, well, her life is very different from mine. But it's only just these slightly different magnitudes. But again, we all want the same things. It's why a foreign film made 50 years ago can move you, or an animated film, or a film set in a galaxy far, far away. Precious is not as different as we might like to think. And when people say, oh, I'm afraid to see the movie, it'll depress me. You know, I find depressing movies that are supposed to be uplifting but don't offer the kind of authenticity that really makes us face who we are and how we think.
And for you, obviously, the authenticity is more important than some kind of tacked-on solution, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I do love the idea of everything not tied up in a nice bow at the end of things, because life doesn't work that way. It's a constant journey. And so many of those great films that were breaking through in the 60s and 70s had those open-ended finales that resonated with you. And but there are films, the great thing about film is that there are many genres, and sometimes it is fun just to, you know, to be in to watch a story that is wrapped up in a neat package. And those films can be satisfying too, because, you know, as long as they're inspired. Now, we talk about the idea of authenticity. Oftentimes, a film can be this sort of an allegory or a parable. It can have these elements that are, you know, I guess two dots can talk to each other and ultimately it can mean something. But I guess underneath, at its core, if it's about something and it's inspired and somebody cared, it will connect, I think, with you. And it's such a hard thing. You know, the truth is all around us, but it's such a difficult thing sometimes to face and to convey, because the lightest of comedies, the effective ones, will still make some kind of statement about our existence and our struggles.
What was your first conversation with Lee like? I mean, because, you know, it's you're talking to somebody who's only about to make a second movie. It's an enormously difficult book to adapt. He's seen your work, but he doesn't know what you're capable of as a writer in terms of writing a feature of this type. What was that conversation like?
Well, after I looked at the book, just the first few pages, I thought that I could do it. I looked him in the eye. I said, I think I can do it. It's sort of remarkable. If he sees something in you, some kind of ability in you, he will give you a chance. And most people start from a no. So from there, he asked me for a writing sample. And I had plenty because I'd been writing away in the wilderness for years. Hey, I'll take your pick. So, and he read the writing sample and he liked it. And then, you know, I wanted him to be sure that I was a guy, and I was just so excited that, you know, someone had taken interest in me and my work. I gave him the first 15 pages free. I just said, I was so crazy about this material. It was a pleasure. And so after the 15 pages, he said, you're the one. I said, are you sure? And he said, yes, I'm sure. I just know. And throughout the writing process, most of what he would say to me was, keep going. And, you know, that takes a lot of security on his part. I mean, you know, if a baseball manager sits through a whole game and doesn't make one change or one move, you know, that manager knows what he wants and maybe precisely what he's doing. And that's the way Lee is about assembling talent. It's remarkable.
Yeah. But somebody's got to draft the team, though, doesn't he?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And that's what he's involved with, every last detail of these films. And he gets it done, you know, in this amazing way. He works in these mysterious ways and just keeps charging forward with tough material. So for Precious to break through in this day and age with all these big films, many of which are great, I love Star Trek, is remarkable that it is on the same landscape as Avatar, for example. It's just a wonderful thing, and it says a wonderful thing about cinema in general, I think.
Well, we're out of time. Jeff, thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure, Elvis. This is an honor. I've wanted to sit down with you for a long time, and you know, I would read your writing when I was out in the wilderness, and this is part of the whole surreal experience of this year.
Well, my job is to make it as surreal as humanly possible, so I come through, and I hope to see you here again.
Oh, it would be my pleasure.
My guest is Jeffrey Fletcher, the Oscar-nominated adapter of the book Push, which is known in theaters as Precious. Our technical director at KCRW in Santa Monica is Mario Diaz, with assistance from Paul Ruess at the Argo Network in New York. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey is the producer. It's surreal here. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.